Sports Talk, where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And good afternoon, Steve Jones Show, News Radio 1070, WKOK, WKOK.com, SteveJonesShow.com. Sean Carey here, Steve Jones, as we speak, on his way into the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Don't forget now, the Steve Jones Show is available as a podcast. We invite you to subscribe either on iTunes or Google Play. If you listen to us on iTunes, feel free to leave a review. Thanks ahead of time for doing that. Got a packed and stacked show today. Dane Brugler from CBS Sports and also senior NFL draft analyst for NFLDraftScout.com will be joining us. Tonight in hockey in the NHL, the Pittsburgh Penguins looking for a four-game sweep. But tonight it is game four of their first-round matchup with Columbus. We got Pete Jensen. Yes. Pete Jensen, yes, from NHL Network and NHL.com. Be talking pucks with Pete, yeah, later. And how about, yes, the Toronto Maple Leafs? I mentioned this in the open yesterday. They're giving Washington all they can handle. And yes, they got an overtime win last night. So yes, things could be breaking nicely for the Pens. They may not be playing the Caps coming up in round two.
They might be playing a better team.
Yeah, that's true. This is true.
Okay, big. I always love when people, I wish this would happen. Okay, well,
you got what you wanted, Sparky.
You got what you wished for. Let's see if it's right.
And also our weekly appearance from our great friend Neil Coulong from USA Today, and does a lot of writing for the Steelers Wire. Get his thoughts on Dan Rooney, who was laid to rest in Pittsburgh today.
And Dame Brugler is going to, we're going to talk about the NFL draft with him.
He is awesome. I remember his appearance last year before the draft, and yeah, crushed it.
Yeah, I guess he thinks the Steelers are going to take the backup quarterback for Oregon.
In what round?
First round.
Oh, come on.
They love him. Look, there's one guy in this draft that is gets a lot of play. All right. Here's one of the issues I have as someone who's been around the block more times than, you do get to a certain point where you know every inch of the block. Okay.
And you can claim that with complete 100% confidence.
Right.
With no background check required.
Right. But we're in an era where I sense either young writers or young sportscasters want to feel like they are watching the greatest ever. Tiger Woods had the greatest run ever, but is he the greatest golfer ever? I think you can make a stronger argument for Jack Nicklaus, who's before their time. I think, Sidney Crosby's great, but they didn't get a chance to see. I haven't heard anybody proclaim him the greatest. There's a lot of arguments about LeBron James. LeBron James could have played in any era at any time. Any era, any time. But there are a couple of other people I'd choose before him if I had to pick somebody to start the franchise with. I mean, I'd be really tempted to take Kareem Abdul-Jabbar or Bill Russell before I would take LeBron James. I probably would take Michael Jordan before. And that's not a put-down of LeBron James. Not in any way, shape, or form.
Oh, and other names that I heard of that I didn't get a chance to witness growing up, like Bob Cousy or the Oscar Robertson.
Well, I mean, Russell Westbrook, what Russell Westbrook has done is remarkable this year. But we have a list of what I feel are A-minus, quote, superstars. Now, Brady, for example, is not one of them. He is an A-plus star. Peyton Manning was an A-plus star. Jerry Rice, an A-plus star. But then we latch on to some other people. I'll give you an example. I think James Harden, for example, is an excellent scorer, but he's an A-minus star. He'd be a role player on some of the greatest teams of all time. He would have been a role player on the Celtics and the Lakers in the 80s. Role player. And you just talked about Toronto and Washington. Alex Ovechkin, to me, fits that definition perfectly. A minus star. I hear about Ovechkin all the time. Ovechkin this, Ovechkin that. And every time I watch him, I don't see it. I don't see him dominating the game. I don't see him coming up with a critical game-winning goal. I don't see any of that stuff. Some of these guys, I mean, you know, Harden put up a lot of points this year, but he put up a lot of points in some garbage games. I mean, I want to know when the game is, and to me, the separator is when the game's on the line. And I always laugh when they talk about, well, LeBron is allergic to taking that last shot. He always passes it up. I have no problem with somebody making a really good basketball player, or a really good hockey player, or a really good football player. To me, when you have that kind of sense for the game and the moment, to me, that's star worthy. But I've never seen Ovechkin in the moment make the play. We talk about Mike Trout all the time. Mike Trout is a great regular season player. He's had only one playoff, so he doesn't have a big sample size. But in that one playoff, he didn't perform well. Now, Bryce Harper, conversely, when he's been in the playoffs, he's performed really well. Andrew McCutchen, regular season, okay, fine. Postseason, okay. Missing. So we've got a lot of A-minus guys that are built up to be so big because they want people to feel like they're seeing something awesome, special, and incredible when they're seeing really, really good for those of us over the course of our lives who saw awesome and incredible. You know, Dick from Milton calls all the time. Is there a third baseman today in today's game that is in the same category as Brooks Robinson? Anywhere? Brooks Robinson and Mike Schmidt are the two greatest third basemen of all time in my lifetime. Two greatest. Schmidt's power, Schmidt's ability at third base, cutting down on strikeouts. Robinson, bat in the clutch, glove in the clutch. There's not a third baseman out there that's in their category. There's not a shortstop right now in the category of the era of shortstops that we just saw from when A-Rod was early in his career at Seattle to Derek Jeter to Cal Ripken Jr. You don't have shortstops in that category. You don't see that. Now, in football, I look at Brady. You know, again, in football, I've seen Unitas, I've seen Starr, I've seen Bradshaw, I've seen, you know, Montana. I mean, you know, Elway, everybody threw. They're all a little bit different in style. They're all great in their own way. One thing that Montana has over all of them is he never threw an interception in the Super Bowl. 11 touchdowns, no picks. What Brady has over him are the last-minute comebacks. Montana had to pull off one in a Super Bowl. Now, Brady's also lost two Super Bowls, but still among the best ever. And you can argue that we are watching, especially in certain situations, the best quarterback. But there are too many, and now I want to get to the draft. Now, all this is leading to the draft. How much have we heard about Leonard Fournette the last 3 years? Yet when you look at Leonard Fournette, how many yards did he pick up against opponents LSU was expected to beat? And how many yards did he pick up in 50-50 games? He didn't pick up many yards at all in 50-50 games. There's a lot of hype around him. There's been a lot of ESPN hype around him. Oh, he should have come out last year, this, that, and the other thing. Well, I can tell you right now, and I made the statement last year during the season. I'm talking about the 2015 season now. In the 2015 season, I said on the show, and I said it probably four or five times during the course of the season, that if you gave me a choice between Zeke Elliott of Ohio State and Leonard Fournette of LSU, it was a no-brainer, easy call that Elliott, I thought, was the best all-around running back in college football. Blocker, receiver, runner. And that Fournette was not in his category. I'm not trying to put Leonard Fournette down, but he has been built up. If he's on the board, he's not the running back I pick. If he's on the board, he is not the guy I pick. There have been too many A-minus guys. I want people that in the clutch are dependable. Ovechkin in the clutch, not dependable. Okay, Harden in the clutch, not dependable. Fournette in the clutch, not dependable. And it's one of the separators that keeps you from being an A-plus star to being an A-minus star. I mean, who do you want? Okay, runners on second and third and two outs. Who do you want at the plate? Mike Trout or Derek Jeter? Who? Okay, second and third, two outs, it's all on the line. Who do you want up there? Mike Trout or Derek Jeter? The war people will tell you, oh, look at Trout's numbers, blah, 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 blah. Guess what? When the moment counts, the game was slow for Derek Jeter. I'm a Red Sox fan. Okay? Lifelong Red Sox fan. I picked Derek Jeter. I needed to get a hit to win it. Who do I pick? Mike Trout? David Ortiz? There's no decision. Zero. Cal Ripken, Mike Trout, no decision. Brooks Robinson, not the batting average and the regular season numbers of Mike Trout, but I'd tell Brooks Robinson, grab a bat. I'm not putting down Mike Trout here. I'm talking about people with proven track records when the money is on the table. Who's the coolest cat out there? Who's dependable? Okay? There is a major difference between being totally enamored with awesome talent, which is great to see. But if you give me a choice between awesome talent and someone else who is capable and has done great things and is dependable, dependability is something that is not often talked about when it comes to sports, because guess what? Okay? Talent is sexy. Dependability is boring. Dependability wins every time when you're a coach. Coaches want people who are dependable. This will be a topic I will bring up with James Franklin when he sits down with me on Thursday night. when he's on from 6 to 7. We are going to talk about, in part, the topic of dependability, why coaches make certain decisions about personnel that people don't agree with, and what dependability means to a coach so that fans understand why certain decisions are made. Talent is easy to be enamored by. You can see it. Dependability is something that has to happen in that sport Sunday through Thursday to then set up Saturday. I'm going to bring it up with Pat Chambers, too, because Pat Chambers is going to join us on, I think, Thursday show. We're going to have Pat Chambers on. I'm going to bring up the same thing with him. Whenever I talk to Joe Souza, I'm going to bring it up with him. What does dependability mean? They have to earn your trust. Have to earn your trust. Trust and dependability. Because look, there's already a talent base to begin with. What separates talent base? Dependability and trust separate talent base. And something a lot of people don't get. I don't understand why they don't get it, but I mean, I've tried to explain it over there. I've gone to speak to certain groups over the years. And what I speak to, maybe a dozen a year. And it comes up once in a while. I remember one of my favorite ones was back in the mid-2000s. Somebody was asking about players and why, you know, why isn't player A playing versus B and whatever. And they said, well, and my favorite was, why don't they play the best players? What? What do you think? They go into a meeting? Do you think Joe Paterno went into a meeting? Or James Franklin today goes into a meeting and says, you know what? I think it'd be a lot more fun if we didn't play the best players and, you know, and see how it turns out. We'll play with one arm tied behind our back. I don't understand. He's a 4.5-star guy. He's a 2-star guy. Why are they playing the 2-star guy? I can tell you no uncertain terms why they're playing the 2-star guy. In practice, the 2-star guy is dependable. The 4.5-star guy has proven to be inconsistent and undependable. Hard to explain sometimes when there are perceptions about how good somebody is and, you know, I see it on an everyday basis. I see it every day. I get to see who's dependable and I get to see who is fighting to get to a level of dependability. We'll come back more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Starling Marte has been suspended for 80 games. The Pirates center fielder out, failed a drug test on PEDs. So I guess Andrew McCutchen's going back to center field. 80-game suspension. Something that, you know what? I'm not sure the Pirates can recover from this one. 80-game suspension, Starling Marte. Wow. That is a major blow to that organization. And for him, the reputation, all he has to do is call Ryan Braun. Boy, what a blow to the Bucks. All right, next half hour, Pete Jensen, NHL.com.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Starling Marte suspended for 80 games by Major League Baseball for PED use. A major blow to the Pirates. On this particular day, this half hour, Pete Jensen, NHL.com. We'll talk about the Stanley Cup playoffs. Next half hour, Dane Brugler. We'll talk about the NFL draft, which is next week. Final half hour, Neil Coulong from Pittsburgh, USA Today, joining us to talk about the Steelers and about the late Dan Rooney. It's all coming up on today's show. Coming up on Thursday, Penn State basketball coach Patrick Chambers will join us. Thursday evening, 6:05 to 7, special edition of the Penn State Coaches Show featuring James Franklin, which will feature James Franklin from 6:05 to 7. And then on Friday, let's see, what direction are we going on Friday? I think we have another draft analyst coming up on Friday. I know you had one set up.
Yeah, definitely for Thursday. Ross Tucker, who we hear from time to time. Yeah, doing sometimes he'll do fill-in on the Dan Patrick Show, a college football analyst on NBCSN, and also has his Ross Tucker football podcast. He is definitely deep into the draft, so that'll be his first time joining us on the show. Got him set for 3:35 on Thursday.
So Ross Tucker will join us.
And keeping our fingers crossed, too, for Bruce Feldman of Fox Sports.
Yes.
Hopefully tomorrow. We hear Bruce visited one of the Penn State practices not too long ago. So
he was. He was there last week. I want to say he was there last Wednesday. I was going to go over and talk with him for a little bit, but I got hung up with, not hung up, but a student was there, and they wanted me to talk to a student. While he was on campus, so I did. And I don't mean a football player. It's somebody who college communications. You do what you have to do when they ask you to do it. All right. So bring in this day in sports history. And in 1923, Yankee Stadium opened in the Bronx. The Yankees beat the Red Sox 4-1. John Philip Sousa's band played the national anthem. And Babe Ruth hit the first home run. 1938, President Franklin Roosevelt threw out the first pitch, preceding the season opener between the Washington Senators and the Philadelphia A's. A's are now in Oakland. The Senators are now in Minnesota. 1956, Ed Rommel became the first umpire to wear glasses during a Major League Baseball game. Oh boy. 1962, the Celtics win their fourth straight NBA title. Another substandard performance for Bill Russell. He had 30 points and grabbed 40 rebounds. Unbelievable. 1966, Bill Russell becomes the first player coach of the Celtics. He also becomes the first African American to be the head coach of a pro team. 1977, Eddie Murray hit his first career home run. 1982, the Braves set a National League record when they won their 11th straight game to start the season. You know who the manager of the Braves was then? You'll love this. Joe Torre. 1985, Tulane abolishes its 72-year-old basketball program. The reason? Charges of fixed games, drug abuse, and payments to players. Of course, Tulane has basketball back again. 1987, Michael Jack Schmidt hits his 500th career home run at Three Rivers Stadium. Joe Montana retired from the NFL in 1995. 2005, it was announced that the Monday Night Football franchise would leave ABC in 2006 to move over to ESPN. Monday Night Football had been at ABC since 1970. And that's this day in sports history. All right, Stanley Cup playoffs, interesting developments. Canadian revival has happened. Ottawa up 2-1 on the Bruins. Toronto up 2-1 on Washington. Montreal up 2-1 on the Rangers. The Penguins lead their series 3-0. With the Canadian revival, we bring in Pierre Jensen, a.k.a. Pete. Welcome, Pierre.
Yeah, it's off the charts how quickly this rebuild has gone in Toronto. They have a couple of core players who were around for, you know, their last the playoff debacle they had in 2014 when they blew that Game 7 lead to the Bruins. Guys like Tyler Bozak, who scored a big goal yesterday. James Van Riemsdyk, another, Jake Gardner, guys like that. But mostly this is a team that has 10 players that have made their Stanley Cup playoff debuts in this postseason series. It's amazing to see how deep this team is. I mean, whether you're talking about the first line with Austin Matthews, flanked by another two rookies, William Nylander and Zach Hyman. Then you have Mitchell Marner, who's another stud rookie who is a top-notch 60-point producer in the regular season. Third line, Nazem Kadri, who is one of the most underrated depth centers in the game. And then the fourth line, they've gotten contributions, too, from Kasperi Kapanen, who was traded in the Phil Kessel deal a couple years ago. And that fourth line, you look at with Brian Boyle and Matt Martin, guys that have tons of playoff experience, Martin with the Islanders, Boyle with the Lightning, and the New York Rangers. So all of a sudden, not only does this team look deep, they look deeper than the Washington Capitals right now, and that explains why they've been able to fend off the Capitals in two of the first three games of the series. And to be honest, I mean, all three of them have gone to overtime. I think they're putting the fear of God right now in the Capitals, which is pretty amazing.
I agree. I think the game plan that Babcock has put together, where they attack by hitting, has worn Washington down in the final 30 minutes of the game.
Yeah, definitely. Whether it's been hits on Ovechkin or any of their other star forwards, you haven't seen. I mean, you saw in Game 1 from Justin Williams the usual playoff heroics, but
right, yeah.
You just haven't seen the level of offensive prowess that we've been accustomed to seeing. And now Braden Holtby's given up four goals in back-to-back games, which is unlike him with his three straight 40-win seasons and his strong peripherals throughout. So it's just surprising to see this. And then another guy is Frederik Andersen, who's been with the Ducks. He's like the only Danish-born NHL goalie in history. And he's a guy that has been completely under the radar in years past with the Ducks. And now he steps into this group where he's kind of the backbone of this young group, a young fiery group that doesn't really know what they're up against or what they're getting themselves into, but they look pretty darn good right now.
The Penguins have no Chris Letang, but no problem so far. What has impressed you about what the Penguins have done?
Yeah, the first line is just outstanding. They were in the regular season with Gensel, Sheary, and Crosby.
Right.
And I found a stat today where Gensel is tops in the league in the playoffs right now in goals per 60 minutes. But in the regular season, the Penguins had four of the top five in points per 60 minutes, which includes Sheary at the top, Gensel, Connor McDavid from the Oilers, and then Malkin and Crosby. So that says it all right there. You're not even venturing down to Phil Kessel, Patrick Hornquist, guys like that. So the top line has just been outstanding after being held off the board in Game 1. And really, it boils down to that Game 3. If the Blue Jackets win that Game 3, maybe they can make this a series. But that was just the ultimate backbreaker. You had some iffy goals allowed by Fleury, but the fact that the Penguins were able to roar back and finish that, I think this series is very close to being over.
Is any team playing better team defense in front of a very good goalie like Nashville is?
I don't think so. I think maybe you could talk about the St. Louis Blues, but I think that's more due to the play of Jake Allen in the first round. But Nashville has completely shut down Chicago's top two lines. Only, a few goals all series, two goals all series in three games, back-to-back shutouts to start off the series in Chicago for Nashville. And then Nashville down 2-0 yesterday. They found a way to get back into that game. They got a lucky bounce. And then in overtime, Kevin Fiala finished it off. He's a young player who's finally hitting his stride. And Nashville, same deal. Chicago has two great lines, but Nashville is a deeper forward arsenal. They have three strong lines and a deeper defense, to be honest, with their top four, P.K. Subban, Matthias Ekholm, Ryan Ellis, and Roman Josi. So, and then Pecorine with how the team... The thing about the Predators this year is that they haven't played their best hockey until right now because they've had a number of injuries at different times. Josi was out for a while. Subban was out for a while. They got that final 10-15 game stretch of the regular season to get their stuff in order, and I think they've taken the Blackhawks by surprise. And this is what you look at with some of these series. Past performance against those current playoff opponents, and Nashville has played Chicago tough a couple of times in the past, but I think this is their strongest team yet. And the way they've performed in front of Pecorine has been admirable, and I do expect a pushback from the Blackhawks here, maybe winning a game or two, but Nashville has built a commanding lead in this series.
Plus, Nashville also has better options on national anthem singers. All right, so she surprised her husband last night. Mike Fisher did not know she was going to do that.
And how about that crowd down there in Nashville? Is that the rowdiest atmosphere in the league?
You know what?
It's up there.
It's up there, but you know what? The way Toronto acted in overtime, you can tell.
And they have another stadium-sized crowd outside the building, right, too, in Toronato. So
yeah. I mean, the Nashville thing is special because it's not a traditional hockey area. The Toronto thing, to me, is a little different because they've suffered for such a long time at a place where, I mean, if the NHL wanted to put a second Toronto team in, like, you know, we've got three New York teams, you can go two LA teams. But if they wanted to put a second Toronto team in as an expansion team, they would be sold out right away. I think that'd be fair, right?
The interest level is amazing in Toronto, and it's crazy to see. I mean, we've seen in recent playoff years for the different sports. Last year with between the MLS team and the Blue Jays and the Raptors, they're huge sports fans in Toronto, but it almost the rise of these young rookies and the instant playoff success, I think, has made the city forget about those other teams right now, because it's just that much more popular up there.
I mean, no question about it. But what's happened in Nashville, that's a non-traditional area, and they act as if they've had the game forever.
Yeah, no, that's so true. And they play. They have live country music down there during the games. It looks pretty fun. I have yet to be to a game down there, but it's definitely on my bucket list.
Pete, what does it mean to the league that not only have some of the young stars have been able to get into the playoffs, and not only that, they've performed well?
Yeah, from Matthews to Nylander and Mitchell Marner and, Connor McDavid.
Connor McDavid's been really good, yeah.
Yeah, the Oilers have the Sharks on the ropes right now entering Game 4, so I think it's huge for the league, for the fans, the casual sports fans, to see some of these players in action scoring their first playoff goals and just getting to know these names more, because these are the teams. I mean, it's not crazy to say right now that in the next couple of years, or even just to say over the next 5 to 10 years, that the Maple Leafs and the Edmonton Oilers could very well be up there with the Pittsburgh Penguins in dominating the NHL, which is pretty amazing.
It is pretty amazing. And, I mean, the attendance in the playoffs has been great. Do you think, look, it's been a long time since a Canadian-based team. Now, it would not help the American ratings. Now, maybe a young star by Matthews might help. Maybe a young star like McDavid may help. But a Canadian team's not going to help the U.S. ratings. It's just the way it is. But how good for the league would it be to have that happen?
Yeah, I think right now it's a good blend to have the Canadian teams in many cases playing against popular U.S. teams, whether it's the Oilers against the Sharks or the Capitals against the Maple Leafs or the Ottawa Senators against the Boston Bruins, another big market there. I think it's good. I think that reinvigorating those Canadian markets, they have some of the best crowds in the league, and I do believe that when your team loses to a team, you especially if you're in a big market, you you tend to follow that team's run. And I think the star power of these couple of teams that have a chance to go deep in this postseason is very appealing to an average sports fan. So I think it could be different than, you know, maybe having a smaller market Canadian team normally making the playoffs and affecting, you know, ratings in America negatively. I think the star power could be a difference maker here, and it would be interesting to see. And I think we're going to see it in the next couple of years. I think we're going to see one of those teams go to the Cup final.
Yeah, because what I'm seeing, Pete, right now is, except for maybe Line A up at Winnipeg, this playoff has more star power in the opening round, spread out and over a wide spectrum, which is exactly what the league I thought needed.
Yeah, you need recognizable names. You need strong teams, which a lot of these teams are, 3-4 lines deep, as I mentioned. But it's high level of skill, and yeah, we can only hope as hockey fans that we can see players like Line A and Jack Eichel in the playoffs in years
Jack
to come
Eichel.
As well.
I forgot about Jack Eichel. Yeah, how could I forget that? Terry's sitting there saying, please, anytime you want to, you know, jump in.
Well, there's quite a few of them out there these days, so yeah he slips through the cracks a little bit, but he's maybe as good as any of them.
Pete, a.k.a. Pierre, thank you so much. Appreciate it very much. Look forward to seeing you on NHL Network again soon.
Thanks, Steve. Enjoy the rest of the playoffs.
All right, that's Pete Jensen, NHL.com. Next half hour, we'll jump in with Dame Brugler on the NFL Draft as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
Get outside and clean up the yard.
Yes, dear.
Springtime means cleanup time, even at Sunbury Motors Ford. Sunbury Motors Spring Inventory Cleanup has begun. Once a year, SMC takes their entire new Ford inventory and prices them at levels not seen before. SMC is where you want to be to choose from 33 Ford Escapes starting at $19,380. Sunbury Motors has sold over 40,000 new Ford trucks in the past 102 years. SMC is where you want to be to choose from over 4 city blocks of new Ford trucks. F-150s starting at an amazing $24,919. SMC is where you want to be if you want a brand new Ford Focus from $14,835. SMC is where you want to be for a 2017 Edge starting at $27,420. SMC has your next Ford Explorer ready to roll at an unheard of $29,835. Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. SMC, satisfying more customers, selling more cars. A tradition of trust since 1915.
It is not what Pirate fans wanted to hear. An 80 game suspension for Starling Marte, their best player. PED. Test failure. Yeah. That is, that's a tough one.
So you get your eraser out. How many wins do you think this would affect the team? Maybe now 5 less, 10 less?
Well, I'd have to ask an expert on war, wouldn't I?
Wins below 500 now?
This is one of those where the Pirates are a team and an organization that can have success when a lot of things go right. You know, that margin of error, and this really belts the margin of error for them. I mean, in those 80 games, it might cost them 10. It might cost them 10 games. You know, a catch that he would make that somebody else wouldn't make. A throw that he could make that somebody else can't make. A stolen base that he would get that somebody else wouldn't get. I don't know. It's that's a tough one. That's a really tough one for the Pirates. All right. Next half hour, Dane Brugler in the NFL draft. Did the suit test positive for PEDs?
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.